Hello, I'm Rick Springfield, and you're listening to Your Morning Coffee, the podcast. Weekly music news for the new music business.
From Billboard, TikTok is talking to UMG again, but Washington may hold the keys to its future.
From the Wall Street Journal, inside Taylor Swift's surprise return to TikTok.
And from Music Business Worldwide, the NMPA accuses Spotify of attacking songwriters as it changes how it pays mechanical royalties in the U.S. All right, Jay, we've got so much to talk about. We're glad you're here. And Jay and I are going to start the show right about now.
Stand by for transmission.
This is London calling.
Wake up! The revolution is at hand!
Your morning coffee is on the air.
Your morning coffee, the weekly music news for the new music business. It's the highly curated, agitated, advocated, moderated, and liberated digital music information that you need to know. We are your digital music authority. And now from our studios in Hollywood, California, here's your hosts, Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart.
Gotta tell you,
so catchy. More hooks than a tackle box.
We love the jangly kind of power pop thing, and that is certainly in that wheelhouse.
Yeah, that's Dead Serious by Tinted Windows, and this is an older song. But the reason we brought it in today was it's for Record Store Day. They finally put this out on vinyl. And I'm thrilled. It's the band again, Tinted Windows. You may not remember that. Maybe you do. But it's Taylor Hansen singing. It's Bunny Carlos from Cheap Trick. It's James Iha from Smashing Pumpkins. Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne. It is a power pop gem.
Yeah. And a one-off thing back in 2009 or something. I'm trying to remember when that was. But it was... It's so catchy and hooky. God, I just love that stuff.
Yeah. So happy Record Store Day. And, you know, by the time you listen to this episode, Record Store Day will be over. But I don't know if you saw the announcement this week from Discogs. The headline was Global Record Store Day Organizations and Discogs collaborate on an international post-event shopping experience. So beginning Monday, when this episode drops, April 22nd, Discogs will power a centralized online shopping experience dubbed Record Store Day Afters, once official Record Store Day online sales begin. This cooperative initiative will feature official Record Store Day stores from over 13 countries, providing a platform to amplify their reach during this pivotal period for record stores.
Right. After visiting their favorite local record shop on Record Store Day, April 20th, fans who couldn't purchase their desired Record Store Day 2024 releases in-store can buy them online directly from participating record stores. This includes exclusive titles that are only available in certain Record Store Day regions. Additionally, the Discogs community will enjoy a wealth of Record Store Day-focused content, record collecting guides, and more, all in this one online destination.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Very cool. And we love Record Store Day. And if you miss this one, shame on you. But the next one is Black Friday. And I can't wait. This week, we dropped a new Behind the Setlist podcast. We interviewed Kay Flay. She talks about her live shows, how she connects with her audience, the value of collaborating with other musicians, and her hesitancy to use social media. Found that really interesting, and how artists deal with mental health issues and what she does when she comes off stage. So check out Behind the Set List, our interview with Kay Flay.
That'll be a good one. We also have an upcoming online event from our friends over at Music Tectonics. It's called License to Generate. Is This Music Real? And they say, like it or not, AI is here to stay, and it will continue to be harder and harder to know if what you are seeing and hearing is real, derivative, or fake. How will we be able to discern between a track or video that has AI influence and one that doesn't? RSVP for License to Generate. Is This Music Real? That's going to be on May 8th. Hear from experts on protecting the music biz from unethical AI, and you can RSVP. There is a link in your Morning Coffee newsletter this week. That'll be really good.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And just really quickly, Music Biz, the conference is coming up. I'm moderating a panel. It's called Planning Your Next Release, Advice from the Experts. And it talks about releasing music and how, you know, easy it is. Some would say too easy, but doing it right, of course, takes planning. And fortunately, we've got some industry veterans that are going to walk you through best practices on creating a successful release launch. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, so you're going to have Randall Foster from Symphonic, Dustin Boyer from Venture Music, Caitlin Parmenter, is that how she
pronounced Parmenter.
Yeah, KP. I want to say Parameter or something. Anyway, she's from Alchemy Artist Services, Eric Petit from M-Theory, or Petty, I should say, and Rachel, and is she Behringer or Behringer?
I think it's Behringer.
Yeah, I think it's Behringer too. There's a manufacturing company called that. Anyway, she's from CD Baby, and it's, of course, moderated by our friend Jay Gilbert. And this panel is part of the Music Biz Roadshow presented by CD Baby and supported by the MLC. That'll be a good one.
The MLC. Speaking of the MLC, I'll be speaking to the MLC CEO, Chris Arend, and MLC, Mechanical Licensing Collective. I'll be speaking to Chris for the show that's coming up this next week. Also in your Morning Coffee this week, there was a really great post by Patrick Clifton, who we've spoken to. He has that really great Tunes and Tales blog. And the headline was Notes on the Fan Economy. And we're going to sit down with Patrick this week and talk about this piece. It's very timely. It's very thoughtful. It's a breakdown of this new fan economy. So be sure to listen into next week's episode, that's easy for you to say, for both of these audio drops.
Right, and just released is a new media research report, Bifurcation Theory, How Today's Music Business Will Become Two, and that's by Mark Mulligan and Tatiana Cirasano. As she puts it best in a recent LinkedIn post, she wrote, as a journalist before joining media research, I often found that whenever a big market shift occurred, media had predicted it first. It's one of the things that attracted me to the company in the first place, and it's been a privilege to contribute to this kind of big picture market shaping thinking.
That's right, and we've had her on the show, and she helped us, I think, with our 100th episode. We think the world of Toddy. She goes on to write, this is another one of those moments where a huge shift is about to happen. And we would argue already is. I'm excited to share Mark Mulligan and I's latest report, Bifurcation Theory, in which today's music business will become two parallel industries, one focused on lean back listening, calls that listen, and on the other, artist fan relationship, and they call that play. You can purchase the full report at mediaresearch.com/reports.
Right. So key data and insights included in this report are: what challenges is the current music industry facing, how this will lead to a bifurcated post-streaming music industry, and how consumers discover new music and subsequent consumer behaviors around discovering new music.
Yeah. And also an analysis of differences in music discovery behaviors by age and recommendations on creating both lean in, fan centered, and lean back simplified music experiences. So, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to somebody that you and I talk about frequently. We love Midia. We love Mark Mulligan's team over there. I got to sit down and talk with Mark. He's the managing director and analyst over at Midia Research. Let's let that roll. Mark, thanks for joining me today. So great to see you.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
We're talking about this report. Tell us about the democratization of music creation.
Yeah, well, you know, without trying to sound too Marxist about it all, yeah, I think we definitely are in the democratization of the means of production and distribution. You know, the distribution bit came first in many respects, right? With, you know, the likes of TuneCore and DistroKid and CD Baby, etc., all giving, you know, artists the ability to get onto the same playing field as the superstars. But the thing that's really accelerated it, if you like, is the the really fast rise of music creator tools. You know, the music software that enables people to make music on the computers, on the phones. That used to be the sort of thing you just find in a recording studio, or, you know, it's like dance music and hip hop producers. But it's gone so much wider than that. You know, and there's been a whole bunch of tech that has enabled guitars to get into, you know, GarageBand or the Mac and whatever else. So, you know, the whole idea of music software as a almost as an instrument rather than simply as a, you know, as a mechanism for recording. I think that is really the thing which is transforming the culture of music now. And I think, you know, one of the biggest themes for us about this democratization, having about 7 million artists self-releasing onto platforms, having about another 25 to 35 million or so self-releasing onto other places like SoundCloud and YouTube and TikTok and Discord and Twitch and all those other places, probably not even calling it releases, but just, you know, putting the music out there. That's just the start. What we see is coming next is AI being a catalyst, but not the reason. We think we'll see an Instagram moment for music where basically, you know, music making becomes something for the masses. Tom York sang about everybody can play guitar. Well, they can't really, but anybody can do a text prompt. You know, so that, that's really the democratization. We're at phase one.
Yeah. Tell me about the bifurcation theory.
So the bifurcation theory is what we've done is that, you know, sort of me and my much wiser other analyst heads here at Midia, we've spent the last sort of year really trying to say, look, there's loads of different things going on. What is the connective tissue between them? I love the Gibson sci-fi writer quote about the future's already here, it's just not evenly distributed. You know, when we were in the CD era or the piracy era or the streaming era, it's not like somebody woke up on the day it started and said, oh, we're this in this era now. You have to wait for a couple of years for everything to bubble up to people to say, ah, it's a new epoch, it's a new paradigm. And that's what we're trying to do with bifurcation theory, saying there's a whole bunch of things which may look isolated, or you might not even recognize them for what they are now. And we think it's going to be the start of something new. The reason we're calling it bifurcation is we basically see the music industry going into two different lanes. You know, so on the one lane, we've got streaming. Streaming's not going away, right? You know, streaming performs an incredibly important role. It generates most of the income for music rights holders. It's how most artists find most of their audience. It generates, you know, decent remuneration if you're a bigger artist, not so great if you're a smaller artist, but if you're a bigger artist, decent amounts of remuneration. And so, you know, even though there are lots of pain points, we don't think those pain points are enough to break streaming yet. What they are, though, is the pain points are enough to go and propel a next generation of music makers elsewhere, to go to places where they don't have to put up with all of the things which are getting tough on streaming. You know, the fact you have to make your songs shorter, you have to put them out at least every month, you have to sort of do 5 Instagram posts a day in order to try to get any streams, and that doesn't always happen. And then the big tradition, music industry, suddenly says, oh, and if you don't get more than 1,000 streams, we're not paying you anyway. And so, you know, essentially this drawbridge is being pulled up around the traditional music business, because streaming was the future, but now it's the institution, it's the incumbent, you know, it's the deep state of music, if you like. And so what we're now having is, at the moment, social is the place where everything else is happening, And if you walk into any record label in their marketing team, TikTok and Instagram, but TikTok especially, will be, this is our most important tool for driving marketing. But of course, it's so much more. You know, they sort of think of it as a funnel, you know, where you put a load in at the top and a little bit comes out to streaming. We see it more like panning for gold, where the stuff that comes out is what you don't want. It's the water. The really valuable stuff is the nuggets of fandom and identity and expression and artist-fan relationship. So we think those ingredients, basically what social has got and what is broken about streaming, is going to result in there be two lanes, where social is no longer going to simply be this place where you start marketing. For a lot of people, it's going to be the start and the destination and the journey all rolled into one. And in final point on this, if you think that streaming is all about consumption, it's today's radio business, right? It pays a lot better than radio did, but fundamentally, it's this mainstream proposition where people lean back and listen, and you soundtrack your day, your mundanity of your daily life is soundtracked by streaming. On social, you've got so much more happening there that crucially, we think the two ingredients which is going to empower it to be a new lane for the music business is fandom and identity. So that's one. I said, I would count that as one, even though there's two. And then the other bit is creation. You know, and creation is, like I was saying before, it's about, at the moment, lots of people becoming music creators or creators using these tools, but increasingly it will be consumers making not just their own creations, but recreating their favorite artist creations as well. Because ultimately, we are living in the era, and this is my favorite quote about music ever. When Edison invented the phonograph, there was a big, very successful composer and performer called Sousa, inventor of the sousaphone, and he said, the phonograph is a horrible machine for bringing dead sounds back to life. And if you think about it, until that point, music always was alive. It never sounded the same. And this modern music business in which we sit is built around monetizing dead sounds. So we see the future as being where music becomes dynamic, is continually living and evolving, and is much more participative again, where people can take part.
Yeah, that leads us beautifully into the next question, which is, talk a little bit about the different behaviors, listen and play.
So if you think about when streaming started, as this sort of niche proposition for real music aficionados, people who would, you know, hammer the search bar, fill up, you know, the catalog, pride themselves in doing what they used to do in, you know, in record shops and, you know, it's like, you know, browsing through and finding all of this sort of weird random stuff. And then it became mainstream. And as it became mainstream, just in the same way as Apple used to be this really fast moving technology company, it had to slow down its rate of innovation, because it couldn't move too quickly for what was now a very mainstream, conservative, small C user base. And the same thing has happened with streaming. So we see the future of streaming is stick at what you're really good at, which is, you know, being a, you know, a future radio proposition, but maybe carve out a different space. You know, everybody's talking about superfans. Why are they talking about superfans? Because everybody suddenly realized that streaming's been killing off superfans. So it's like, it's not save the whale or save the planet, it's save the superfan, you know? And so maybe there are things that streaming can do there, bringing back music journalism, which is, you know, dying a not so slow death, and bringing back human creation, bringing back scarcity. You know, one of the great things that old radio used to do was it made you listen to the same song again and again until you fell in love with it. The thing about old retail used to do, you'd spent all your money on these three albums. They were an awkward listen. You'd listen it again and again until you fell in love with them. Now if something's a bit of an awkward listen or the first 15 seconds don't grab you, bang, it's gone. So imagine a place within streaming where you were compelled to listen to at least a minute of the song, for example, and there was only a small number of songs and they were chosen for you, not by you via your algorithm. So essentially we're saying listen is mainly going to be about leaning back, but we can carve out pockets of it which, you know, cater to a more engaged music consumer. And then play, we see very much as being much more younger focused. It's very much Gen Alpha and, you know, younger millennials, a place where people want to do more than simply lean back and listen, because they'll already have streaming to do the lean back and listen. This is why it's bifurcation. It's not replacement. Streaming does a really good job of filling your ears while you're doing something else. Social is a place where you look and you swipe and you engage. And so it's music is should be one of the fundamental ways in which we express ourselves. Hundreds of millions or billions of people across the planet express themselves every day through photographs and video. The future, we think, is people will express themselves through sound as well.
Brilliant. you know, Mike and I are such huge fans of you and your team and your reporting and your analysis. But for those in the audience who don't know what Midia is and what Midia does, talk a little bit about your work and your team at Midia.
Yeah, well, we're super, super fortunate to have not just an amazing team of people who are really creative thinkers. We have an environment in which creative thinking is almost obligatory, right? It's like, you know, everybody's ideas are no better than anybody else's. However old you are, however tenured you are, whatever your job title might be, everybody's ideas can be hacked to within an inch of their life and then rebuilt through collective thinking. We think that approach enables us to lead with an ideas-led approach to analysis. And we've got bucket loads of data. We're really fortunate in having data which is trusted by the industry, and we put a huge amount of time and effort. We think we've got methodologies which, you know, leave much of the competition for dust. You would be perhaps not amazed at the level of granularity going with the details. You know, like when we build music forecasts, we sit there discussing, so what is going to happen to downloads in Thailand by 2031? We go to that level of detail of thinking, but we're not a numbers company. The numbers are the fuel that enable us to have the thinking. You know, it's the, so that we're not just pundits. It's all based upon, you know, the rock solid methodology of, you know, of all forms of data. And we're really lucky to, you know, to work right across the value chains. You know, so we take it from creation through to consumption. A record label and a streaming service are just as important as a songwriter for us. You know, and that's why we try to be sometimes like the UN peacekeeping force of the, you know, the entertainment world, where we try to let every side see each other and understand a thriving ecosystem is a balanced ecosystem. So 10 years ago when we formed Midia, and it's 10 years this year, wow, we made an intellectual bet. Right? And our intellectual bet was everything in terms of entertainment, but just so much of our lives is going to become competitive with each other, interdependent, interrelated, because we're going to be doing so much more of it on a single device. And so that's why when we built the company, even though, you know, we built it as music experts, we always knew it had to be more than music. Because music is going to need to find out its role in games. Games is going to need to find out its role in music and in video and so forth. And you look at all of the, like, the, you know, the games streaming originals, and, you know, you look at all of the, you know, the music podcast, and you know, it's really obvious to us now that all of these forms of entertainment are mixed in with each other. And so our data always works on that basis. We've got consumer data going back to 2016, every single quarter. About 10,000 people every year, across every quarter across the world. We ask them about all types of entertainment so we can look at them against each other. So if you, you know, we could tell you how many Deezer subscribers in Brazil are playing Call of Duty age 16 to 24, for example, you know, and that just enables us to have that view of the world in an interconnected way, which we think is one of the reasons we, you know, are able to come up with the ideas and the thinking we do.
Mark, thank you so much for joining me today. I can't wait for our next conversation. Much appreciated.
Really, it's great to talk. See you then.
Well, you know, my favorite things is to know your lane. And my lane is not smart like these people. And boy, it's so great to have people like that kind of analyzing. And like you said, the Midia folks, we so rely on their insight, their perspective, and all of the research they do. And it's really great to have them around and doing these reports. And man, great stuff.
It's really, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. They do the work and they present it in a way that even knuckleheads like us can understand and wrap our heads around. And it's really a great thing. And these reports are so valuable. And thank you, Mark, for joining us. It was an honor.
And just for the record, it's Mr. Knucklehead, please.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm just saying, yeah. By the way, before we get to the stories, Jay, let's thank our sponsors, including our good friends over at Banzoogle. For over 20 years, Banzoogle has made it easy to build a stunning website and online store for your music. Now they've added a brand new EPK plan so that musicians can create a professional single-page electronic press kit in minutes. All the features you need to design an EPK are already built in, including fully customizable templates, preset EPK page layouts, music players, images, text bio, and video embeds, a gig calendar and press quotes, and access to Bandzoogle's award-winning support team 7 days a week. The new EPK plan starts at just $6.95 per month, and Your Morning Coffee podcast listeners can go over to Bandzoogle.com to try it free for 30 days, and then use the promo code MorningCoffeeEPK, that's all one word, to get 10% off the first year of the new EPK plan subscription. That's Bandzoogle.com, promo code MorningCoffeeEPK, when you sign up to the EPK plan.
Yeah, and a big thank you to Hypebot. Since 2004, Hypebot has chronicled the new music industry and the trends and technologies that are changing how music is discovered, consumed, marketed, and monetized. It's edited daily by founder Bruce Houghton with help from Alana Bonilla. Hypebot and sister blog Music Think Tank are published by live music discovery and marketing platform Bands in Town.
Oh yeah, Bands in Town, over 80 million live music fans trust Bands in Town to get personalized concert alerts, recommendations, and messages from their favorite artists. It's the number one artist service platform, connecting over 590,000 artists with their super fans. Managers, labels, agencies, and artists access their own dashboard to manage and promote their tour dates across all platforms.
Right, and finally, the Music Business Association, love them. The Music Biz Conference, you know, that creates the rooms in which these important conversations that shape the future of our industry really take place. Representing more than 90% of the music industry at large, the Music Business Association serves as the connective tissue for the global music business and provides a trusted forum where ideas and collaboration can flourish. So join me at the Music Biz 2024 conference. It's coming up May 13th through the 16th in beautiful Nashville. I'll be moderating that panel we talked about. Hope to see you there.
That'll be fun. Big thanks to Bandzoogle, Hypebot, Bands in Town, and the Music Business Association, and of course, the man, the legend, the mystic himself,
please.
Music industry consultant, curator of the weekly Your Morning Coffee newsletter, and former executive with Universal Music, Sony Music, and Warner Music Groups. That's right. That is Jay Gilbert, my partner, who I get to do this with every week.
Oh, and I'm so honored to get to do this show every week with Mike Etchart, longtime host of Sound and Vision Radio, formerly of SST Records, Warner Music, Capital EMI, and Universal Music Group, and the guy that taught me to smile with my voice.
Oh, that's right. Well, let's jump into the stories, Jay. Oh my God, it's TikTok. We have to talk about TikTok again. And by the way, TikTok is talking to UMG again, apparently. But Washington may hold the keys to its future. This is in Billboard. It's by Frank DiGiacomo. And by the way, we should mention Billboard is offering Your Morning Coffee readers a 50% discount off of Billboard Pro subscription. There is a special link in the newsletter.
Yeah, how cool is that?
Check that out. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one, because we rely so much on the Billboard Pro stuff.
I subscribe. I love it. And awesome. I forget sometimes that not everybody subscribes. So I get these emails like, oh man, I wanted to read that thing, but it's behind a paywall. Well, now you can just subscribe to Billboard Pro. And, you know, they have a digital version. They have a digital and physical version, all of that. But they're offering a 50% discount. So click that link in Your Morning Coffee and subscribe to Billboard Pro.
Indeed. Well, let's jump into the story. So a source familiar with the talks says ByteDance, that's the Chinese company that owns TikTok, has returned to the bargaining table with UMG after the label group pulled its music from the social media platform at the end of January, citing its refusal to address three critical issues: appropriate compensation for our artists and songwriters, protecting human artists from the harmful effects of AI, and online safety for TikTok's users.
Right. So you might ask, what does this TikTok national security bill do? You know, if Biden signs the bill into law, ByteDance will have 270 days from its enactment. The original gave it 6 months to sell TikTok to a buyer in a country that the United States does not consider a foreign adversary. There's a provision in the bill for a 90-day extension, but we won't get into that. If ByteDance, you know, which has ties to the Chinese Communist Party and is subject to its government, if it refuses to divest itself of TikTok or does not meet the deadline, then the app could be banned from being downloaded or used in the United States.
So in response, a TikTok spokesperson referred Billboard to its written response to the ODNI, that's the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, dated March 15th, which asserts that the social media platform regularly takes action against deceptive behavior, including covert influence networks throughout the world, and has been transparent in reporting them publicly. TikTok has protected our platform through more than 150 elections globally. The response continues, and it's continuing to work with electoral commissions, experts, and fact checkers to safeguard our community during this historic election year.
Right. In addition to those intelligence briefings, Billboard, they obtained a slide presentation that one Capitol Hill source says has been shown to staffers for over 40 senators. The presentation cobbles together previously published articles, analysis, and reports about TikTok's alleged dissemination of disinformation and propaganda to much of the same demographic that uses the app for music discovery. And according to a 2024 Pew Research Center report, 56% of U.S. adults between the ages of 18 to 34, they use TikTok, and 52% use in this age group have posted a video to the platform.
This is really fascinating, by the way. So one of the slides says TikTok is a news organization. As one tech policy expert says, TikTok is a news organization. Trends are indicating that up to 40% of adults 18 to 29 will be getting their news from TikTok in 2024. It's their CNN or Fox News or MSNBC.
Wow, that's crazy. One of the first slides is titled, TikTok has rapidly evolved from an entertainment to a news platform, enormously expanding its influence on the U.S. population. So they include a graph, built by a Pew Research Center that shows 43% of TikTok users regularly got their news from the platform in 2023, nearly double the 22% that did so in 2020. Only X, formerly known as Twitter, 59%, and Facebook, 54%, were higher. And nearly a third of that 43%, that TikTok, were adults under 30 years of age.
So although music's role in TikTok's alleged dispersal of disinformation is not examined in the presentation, the tech policy expert says it's definitely a factor. A 2023 report released by the rights management startup PEX in February revealed that 85% of TikTok videos contain music, more than YouTube at 84%, Instagram at 58%, and Facebook at 49%. And the tech policy expert says that music played on the platform often functions as an emotional gateway to propaganda.
Wow. The power of music is what draws people to social interaction, the source says. They're taking music that gets people excited and, for instance, follow them with horrific videos, and the interaction of those data points creates this powerful tool to affect policy. The expert adds that TikTok's algorithm enables the platform to essentially tailor its approach to each user. It's no longer just one size fits all. The ability now is to take visual cues, music, and sound and target each individual with what sets them off. And they can do that on a massive scale.
It goes on to say the argument in favor of TikTok is that Meta and Alphabet are collecting data from even more people, but they are not based in an adversarial country. The expert continues, there's another key difference as well. TikTok sends you videos that they think you are interested in no matter what. Most young people want to be influencers. In order to be an influencer on TikTok, you have to follow what's trending. So your video is blasted to more people. You tag along with feeds. In the policy realm, if they want to influence public policy, your view is going to be whatever direction that feed is going in. A TikTok spokesman responds, there is absolutely no evidence to these assertions. We have clear rules prohibiting deceptive behaviors.
Yeah, and there's a sub-headline that says they deserve it. The music industry's view of the proceedings in Washington is really mixed. The perspective of artists and songwriters is arguably best expressed by David Lowery, the artist rights activist and frontman for the bands Cracker and Camper Van Beethoven. And, he was also one of the more than 200 creators that in early April signed that open letter to tech platforms, urging them to stop using AI to infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists.
Right. So Lowry says the rates TikTok pays artists are extremely low, and it has a history, at least with me, of using my catalog with no licenses. I just checked to make sure that there are plenty of songs that I wrote on TikTok, and I have no idea how they have a license for those songs.
Right. As a result, Lowry says that while I'm kind of neutral as to whether TikTok needs to be sold to a U.S. owner, the bill pleases me in a general way because I feel that they've gotten away from, you know, or they've gotten away with abusing artists for so long that they deserve it. I realize the bill doesn't punish them for doing that, he said, but that's why a lot of musicians feel they really deserve it.
Right. So then the other thing going on with TikTok, obviously, is the Taylor factor. The news last week that Taylor Swift had restored her Taylor's Version songs to TikTok in the run-up to the April 19th release of her new album that just came out, The Tortured Poets Department, led to speculation that the superstar singer-songwriter who has often spoken out for artist rights could be weaponized by TikTok in the standoff with UMG. In Washington, however, TikTok coalition leader Lane says Taylor Swift being or not being on TikTok has never come up in any meeting I've been in on Capitol Hill. He sees Swift's return to the app as a business decision.
Right. You know, a TikTok spokesperson released the following statement in response to the attachment of the divestiture, it's easy for you to say, bill to the foreign aid package. And they went on to say, "It is unfortunate that the House of Representatives is using the cover of important foreign and humanitarian assistance to once again jam through a ban bill that will trample the free speech rights of 170 million Americans, devastate 7 million businesses, and shutter a platform that contributes $24 billion to the U.S. economy annually." So we'll be following this closely. Super interesting stuff with all of the back and forth. Will they ban TikTok? I don't know. We'll see.
It's kind of heading that direction, it seems like. Well, let's go, which leads into our next story, Jay. Inside Taylor Swift's surprise return to TikTok. This is from the Wall Street Journal and Steele over there. In the battle between Universal Music Group and TikTok, it may be Taylor Swift who has the most leverage. At a recent meeting with record label executives ahead of the debut of her album, The Tortured Poets Department, Swift's camp shared plans to promote the new album on platforms including TikTok, according to people familiar with the matter. Label executives were surprised.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that was probably an understatement.
Yeah, that's because months earlier, of course, the label pulled her music from TikTok. You know, songs like Cruel Summer and Shake It Off, as well as works by other artists as part of a continuing dispute over what the platform pays in royalties. Initially, Taylor Swift's team was on board when her music came down, but her fans have grown frustrated as times passed. Plus, Swift is preparing, well, it's already out now, her April 19 release, it just came out, and she plans to put her work back on TikTok.
The defection by the label's biggest star casts doubt on how much leverage Universal now holds in its dispute with TikTok and whether other artists might follow Swift's lead. TikTok and Universal, of course, are feuding over how much the platform should pay Universal to make its vast catalog of songs available to 1 billion plus social media users worldwide, as well as platform safety and AI issues. The spat is testing the value of the seconds-long song snippet in the social media age, and it's a showdown that will determine who has the most power as listeners increasingly find and consume music on platforms like TikTok.
Yeah, Bill Wordy, who we've covered here, he's a director of Syracuse University's music business program. He said that Universal can't claim they're winning a fight Taylor doesn't want a part of. The fact that this all-powerful artist who has this track record for fighting for artists is saying, "No, I want to be back on the platform," it's very damning to Universal's argument, he said.
Well, Universal has presented its battle with TikTok as an existential to artists and one that will shape the future of the music business. Several artists, industry, and independent music organizations have come out in public support of Universal's stances that the social media platform should pay more and offer assurances around its use of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, Taylor Swift's departure from her label has surprised some industry observers, including us. She is widely recognized for using her star power as leverage research to advocate for the broader artist community. In 2015, of course, she wrote an open letter to Apple explaining she would hold back her album 1989 from the streaming service because the company wouldn't compensate musicians and songwriters for the free 3-month trial period offered to Apple Music customers. Apple reversed course and said they would pay the artists.
Yeah, so before going public in January with a letter telling artists it would be removing their music from TikTok, Universal made managers for some of its top acts, including Swift, aware of its plan, the people said. The planned TikTok campaign made it clear to Universal that Swift would be rejoining her fans on the platform. Universal asked Swift's camp to reconsider. Over more than a week of discussions, the label reiterated its position, laying out why it was holding firm on its stance, why it felt it was important for the industry, and what is at stake.
Yeah, but Taylor Swift's camp didn't budge. Neither did Universal. The star didn't need permission to return to TikTok. Acts of her stature have more flexible deals. Swift's agreement with Universal allowed her to strike a direct agreement with TikTok. Her arrangement also gives her full ownership and control over any music she records during her contract. Taylor Swift's older recordings remain under the control of Shamrock Capital Advisors, which bought them from music executive Scooter Braun back in 2020.
Since then, Swift has been re-recording the albums from her early catalog to create versions she owns. Songs from the re-recordings, as well as new albums recorded under contract with Universal, Lover, Folklore, Evermore, and Midnights, are returning to TikTok. In the weeks since Universal pulled its catalog, TikTok has made some overtures to restart negotiations, but the companies remain in a stalemate. Meanwhile, both sides have said the boycott isn't harming their business.
Right. Glenn Peoples did a really great article in Billboard we talked about a couple of weeks ago that, you know, analyzed Universal's business and showed that it really hadn't taken a hit. While TikTok has said it hasn't seen a decline in engagement or lost users due to Universal removing its catalog, before the standoff, the app was already facing stagnating user growth for the first time in its history. And the Wall Street Journal has reported Universal has said streaming of its artists' music globally has not been affected.
Yeah, well, this is really an interesting sort of thing that's happening with Taylor Swift. And that, like you said, we were both surprised. Or I was like, whoa, really?
Yeah. So there's two major stories we just covered. You know, one, TikTok could get banned in the U.S. If they don't sell to, you know, another country. And then, of course, the Taylor Swift situation. So we'll be following this really closely.
Yeah, well, our last story, Jay, it's the NMPA accuses Spotify of attacking songwriters as it changes how it pays mechanical royalties in the U.S. This is from Music Business Worldwide and our friend over there, Murray Stassen. In 2022, the Copyright Royalty Board, that's the CRB, accepted a near music industry-wide settlement to improve songwriters' streaming royalty rates in the U.S. from January 1st, 2023.
Right. The settlement known as Phono Records 4 or CRB 4 will see songwriters and music publishers paid a headline rate of 15.35% of a given interactive streaming service's U.S. revenue by 2027. The rate is being phased in because Phono Records 4 covers a 5-year period, and that's between 2023 and 2027. So in 2023, starting January 1st, of last year, songwriters and music publishers were to be paid a headline rate of 15.1% of a U.S. Services revenue, increasing in increments to 15.35% in 2027.
So the agreement, which you can read in full via a link to the Music Business Worldwide article in the newsletter, also included a provision about how streaming service streaming services treat bundles. In other words, Spotify would pay a lower rate for bundles versus standalone music. This all-important context behind some news from Spotify last week. Spotify has confirmed that a big change has arrived to the way it pays out mechanical royalties companies in the U.S. as it now considers its premium plans to be bundles because they combine audiobooks and music.
Wow. Treating premium, including individual, duo, and family, as a bundle rather than a standalone subscription impacts how the company pays mechanical royalties to songwriters and publishers in the United States. In short, the rate now paid for Spotify's premium plans is lower than the headline rate for a standalone subscription agreed with publishers as part of the CRB4 proceedings.
So a Spotify spokesperson said on April 18th, as our industry partners are aware, changes in our product portfolio mean that we are paying out in different ways based on terms agreed to by both streaming services and publishers. And they said multiple DSPs have long paid a lower rate for bundles versus a standalone music subscription, and our approach is consistent.
This move, though, has really raised the ire of the U.S.-based National Music Publishers Association, the NMPA, which represents prominent independent publishing companies as well as major publishers, Sony Music Publishing, Universal, Warner Chappell. It's sort of the trade group representing them.
Sure, right. So the NMPA president and CEO David Israelite told Music Business Worldwide, it appears Spotify has returned to attacking the very songwriters who makes its business possible. He added, Spotify's attempt to radically reduce songwriter payments by reclassifying their music service as an audiobook bundle is a cynical and potentially unlawful move that ends our period of relative peace. He says, we will not stand for their perversion of the settlement we agreed upon in 2022 and are looking at all options.
Wow. Audiobooks have been bundled with Spotify Premium since October. Last month, Spotify announced the launch of a $9.99 per month standalone audiobooks tier that was aimed at free users. And prior to Spotify's premium music and audiobooks bundle, the platform treated discounted premium plans tied up with the likes of, like Hulu bundles.
Earlier this month, Bloomberg first reported that Spotify is increasing the price of its premium individual and duo and family plans by $1 and $2 per month, respectively. These price rises will take place in the likes of the UK and Australia by the end of April and in the US later this year.
Yeah, right. And according to Bloomberg's report, Spotify is also planning to launch a new basic tier. And that's going to offer music and podcasts, but not audiobooks. The so-called basic tour will be tier will be priced at the current price of the premium individual subscription, about $11 per month. And basic tier subscribers will have to pay additionally for any audiobook listening time.
Music Business Worldwide understands that this basic music tier will not be considered a bundle by Spotify, but rather treated as a standalone subscription that will pay the agreed headline mechanical rate to songwriters and publishers. Spotify claimed in a statement on Thursday, globally, the company is, in quotation marks, on track to pay publishers and societies more in 2024 than in 2023.
Yeah, their report, that Loud and Clear report from Spotify, it showed that they paid out nearly $4 billion globally to publishing rights holders, who represent the songwriters, of course, over the last 2 years. Spotify said in February that it delivered $9 billion, U.S. dollars, last year to recipients across record companies and music publishers, plus independent distributors, PROs, and collecting societies.
Well, 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 this is, what's the word I'm thinking of? Kind of weaselly. It's kind of a weaselly move, but we shall see where this goes. But we are not finished talking about it. That is for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But Jay, we need to wrap up the episode. It goes so fast. We want to thank everyone for listening, Jay, and I certainly appreciate it. We do not take it for granted. And if you happen to enjoy the show, we would also appreciate it if you tell just one friend. So big thanks to Bandzoogle, Hypebot, Bands in Town, and the Music Business Association. We hope you all have a great week, and we will see you next time here on the Your Morning Coffee Podcast.
You've been listening to Your Morning Coffee, the weekly music news program for the new music business. Join Jay Gilbert and Mike Etchart next time for the digital music news you need to know.